This episode of Travel Today with Peter Greenberg is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, your travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to the podcast that's done from a different location around the world every single week. One day Canada, the next day Thailand, then New York, London. You just never know. This week, we come to you from Boulder, Colorado. And the station's at KGNU right here at the studios. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know exactly what to do. You email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. And you can also follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Peter S. Greenberg, or on Facebook, facebook.com/petergreenberg. So what brings us to Boulder? Well, among other things, that it's such a cool place and a great university. It's also about to become the host for the second year in a row of the Jaipur Literature Festival. Now, you may say, wait, Jaipur, isn't that in India? It is. In fact, they've been doing the Jaipur Festival for over 10 years, actually even longer than that. It's the in India, it's the world's largest free literary festival accessible to everyone. Well, they brought it here to Boulder, and next weekend, it'll be in its second year. Imagine this, about 8,000 people came last year. And they're expecting even more. They've got 49 speakers, 14 pre-events. So from the 23rd to the 25th of September, that's where you'll find a lot of heavy movers and shakers and thinkers involved in great conversation with a different perspective on life and mindfulness, wellness, and the future. Always great conversations here in Boulder.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Joining me now, the news director at KGNU, Maeve Conran. How are you?
I'm great, Peter. It's great to have you here. It's great to be with you as well.
Yes, and that Irish accent would tend people to think that you're not really spending a lot of time here, but you've been here for 20 years.
20 years is when I first came to Boulder as a visitor. My husband, then boyfriend, 20 years ago, took me here. I think it was his sister's wedding, and I got brought to this beautiful state of Colorado and Boulder, and have been living here for about 17 years now.
Wow. I mean, Boulder to me is always a fun place to go because you've got the university, you've got all this energy. But I'm going to ask you this as someone who's lived here for 20 years. I mean, what's special about it for you?
There are so many different things. I think it is the mix. You mentioned just the beautiful nature of it as well. There's the university. There are all the federal research institutions here. There's NCAR, National Center for Atmospheric Research, NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric
Administration.
Administration.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying
that. Those are the hurricane
me.
Boys.
The hurricane boys.
They're the ones who name the hurricanes,
You
guys.
Know, I have friends who are in this type of research in Europe who are always getting reports from Boulder. And
of
so
course.
I had heard about Boulder in so many different capacities, you know, before coming here. And there's the arts, there's the culture, and the proximity really then to a much larger metropolitan area, Denver, as well. And so it really is just a very unique place. And I'd lived in California. It reminded me a little bit of the Bay Area, Berkeley, and San Francisco, too. So it really is. It's great.
So when your friends from Ireland come to visit you, as I'm sure they do, what's the biggest surprise to them?
I think just that it's such a welcoming kind of place, certainly for tourists. And they're used to maybe going to bigger cities. I had a lot of people come over when we got married 11 years ago. We had about 20, 25 people from Ireland.
And that wedding ceremony is still going on, right?
Just sobered up about a couple of days ago.
Look, an Irish wedding ceremony does involve alcohol.
A little bit. A little bit.
A wee bit?
Just a bit. But they sobered up long enough to also enjoy, you know, the beautiful landscape. They love being on campus. It's a gorgeous old university. I think it was just the mix. There was everything. They stayed up, my friend stayed up at Chautauqua, which is a gorgeous, gorgeous venue up right up against the foothills. And I think they just were amazed that you could be right in the mountains, but also right in a city as well.
And so the other thing that people don't realize, you know, you land at Denver and an hour later, you're here.
Or less now.
Or less,
the highway, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it's close.
It's very close.
And public transportation is around.
There is a lot of public transportation. That's a big buzz issue for people living here, because as the city is growing, not just Boulder, but really we see ourselves as part of a larger metro area, really being connected to Denver. As you drive from Boulder to Denver, it's houses all the way. There's a slight break between Boulder because there is a buffer zone here with open space. But after that, it's development, development, development.
And is it getting overdeveloped?
Well, it depends on who you talk to.
I'm talking to you.
I think if you look at how resources are being allocated, the water is such a huge issue here in Colorado, as anywhere in the arid west. Is there enough water for everyone? A lot of people would say no, and there's a couple more million folk projected to move here in the next decade or so, and people are concerned about where is the water going to come for all of these folks. And
the well, not just where the water's going to come, where are the people going to go?
Yeah, absolutely, because that's housing. So housing, transportation, all of that. It's as a beautiful place to live. A lot of people want to come and live here. And so all of the things
I'm going to presume real estate's expensive.
Absolutely. I think the average house price within the city of Boulder is about $650,000.
Whoa.
Yes.
That is high.
Yeah, very high. And that's like been an increase of about 40% in the last 5 years or so. It's a major, major concern for people living here, because what kind of community do we want to have with all of these wonderful resources that we have, the culture, the arts, the environment? Who do we want to live here? Who do we want to be able to live here? And so many people, you know, I'm married to somebody who was born and reared here. And so many people that he grew up with, you know, 40 odd years ago, can't afford to live here anymore.
So where are they going?
People move to the eastern part of the county if they're staying in Colorado. There are more affordable cities and communities just, you know, 20 miles east. That then creates congestion because people are still driving into Boulder in many ways. But those communities are now getting more unaffordable as well. And so that's a big thing that the city council is trying to address. How do we create an affordable community in a place that everyone wants to live in?
We're talking with Maeve Conran, the news director right here at KGNU. And when we come back, Maeve, I want to talk to you about something that the tourism people in Colorado have tried to like downplay for so long, and that's marijuana tourism and what impact that's having, not just here in the community, but around the state.
If you are continuing on to another Southwest destination, please make sure that you check the monitors inside the terminal for your proper gate and flight information. If you are continuing on with another airline, we really don't care. I am a passenger.
We've been speaking to their news director, Maeve Conran. And of course, you know, the elephant in the room question has to be asked: marijuana tourism, or just legalization of marijuana in particular, huge amounts of tax revenue generated, right?
Yes.
Where's that money going?
When the legislation was written, it was said that the tax revenue from marijuana statewide would go to school construction. Now, each individual communities also have municipal taxes, and that is more up to the individual community to decide where that would go, very often to general funds. But the bulk of the state tax revenue is to go to school construction.
And is that where it's going?
Yes. I mean, that's where it has to go.
Right.
So it is going there. Yeah.
So basically, you show up there and it's sort of like you're going to cannabis high school now.
Well, not quite. They don't have plaques on the wall. And it was interesting because when this legislation, when the ballot measure was first put out,
this school made possible by the coolest weed ever, man.
Absolutely. I mean, there was definitely concern. It's like, well, what are we going to fund? Where will this money go? And what do we want necessarily to be associated with?
And it was
money?
More money than they thought.
A lot of money coming in.
So basically, you guys are going to be the school building capital of America.
Well, I think people thought that it would solve all the problems for school construction and we can get all these upgrades. And that's not been the case for a variety of different reasons, either like zoning or maybe not quite as much money as was projected would come in, even though there is a lot of money coming in. It's pretty early days. It's only a couple of years in.
And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, be careful of what you wish for in terms of unintended consequences. I stopped before I came to the studio. I stopped at a FedEx office because I wanted to send my bags. I preach what I say. I do it. And there was a huge sign on the FedEx office saying, just so you'd like to know, you can't ship marijuana. Because people would just thought they could.
Oh, and when you're flying back out of DIA, you're going to see a sign saying you also cannot pack it in your luggage.
Right, because now you're violating a federal law.
Absolutely. And there were all of these cases in airports around Colorado where, you know, there was big buckets deposited here. It's legal if you put it in here. It's not legal.
And there's one guy in the corner saying, yeah, deposit there. I'm taking it home. You know.
Absolutely. So, but, you know, being honest, the big story around cannabis, the legalization or the lifting of the prohibition, is that it's not as big a story as everybody else thinks it should be. I think everybody outside of the state wants to talk about it. But you've been walking around, you've been hanging out in Colorado. Yeah, you're not seeing people stoned out of the mind in every corner. I mean, it's
no, but here's the question that I have not been given an answer to, right? We all know about the laws called DWI, driving while intoxicated. Is there a DWS, driving while stoned?
Yes, there is. And there has been efforts at the state legislative level to try and get ways to see how people can be, you know.
I mean, what's the metric that you use to tell somebody that they're, you know, that they're stoned?
Oh, there is a metric. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but it is illegal to drive while under the influence.
Right. So if you show up with a couple of blacklight posters, listening to a Jimi Hendrix song, you're stoned.
Well, you know what? What's interesting in terms of stopping people in cars, that's not been an issue in Colorado, but we've had issues with neighboring states.
Because they're on the other side of the border just waiting.
Profiling Colorado license plates. And there was a case in a neighboring state where a man was stopped purely because he has Colorado license plates. No marijuana was found on him. And he brought a case to say you cannot just stop people because of Colorado license plates.
But, you know, if I was the sheriff in any one of your neighboring states, it would be a field day for me to put my guys right at the border, because if you're a percentage player, you're going to have people coming across either stoned or packing, if you would say.
Yeah, and that has been an issue. And neighboring states, Oklahoma and Kansas, there were lawsuits that were filed to try and stop Colorado from implementing the legalization of marijuana because they thought it would have a negative impact. And so the neighboring states were definitely paying attention.
Well, there are a lot of people from Kansas and Oklahoma probably vacationing in Colorado precisely because it was legalized.
Well, and the whole issue of tourism around cannabis is interesting because where do you consume it? You cannot have public consumption of marijuana. There have been efforts to have clubs open up where people could pay and go and consume on site. And there are very, very few of them. There was an effort in Denver to have that legalized on the ballot, and that was withdrawn. There's one in Netherlands in the mountains just west here of Boulder. But there aren't that many places for tourists to come and just smoke. You can't do it in a rental car. You can't do it in a hotel.
You're not allowed to?
No.
But people don't know the law. They think they can.
There was a big public awareness campaign aimed at tourists about where you can legally consume marijuana.
Okay, let's talk about that. Where can you legally consume it?
In a private residence.
Right. In a hotel room?
Maybe certain hotels allow it, but as far as
but
I
you
know,
see, that's confusing.
Won't.
See, okay, so you can, and a rental car you can't?
As far as I know, I mean, most rental cars can't even smoke tobacco.
You can't smoke, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. On the street?
No, public consumption is not allowed. Big no-no.
Really?
Yes.
Because when I got out of the airplane at Denver, right, and walked out to where the cars were picking people up, you could smell it.
Oh, well, I'm not saying people don't do it, but you're not allowed. So, I mean, if you want to risk it getting a
ticket. So that's like, you know, the Claude Rains character in Casablanca, shocked to finding that gambling's going on at Rick's Casino and then collecting his winnings from the night before. So,
yeah, and there's also edibles. I mean, that's another thing. How do you regulate non-smokable marijuana?
Yeah, and how do you do that? You don't.
There's been a lot of hand-wringing. How do we have it packaged correctly? How do we keep it out of the hands of kids and all of that? So there are
so
other ways
to consume marijuana.
So when in
Boulder, order your chocolate chip cookies intelligently.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel, cruising and playing the radio, with no particular place to go.
There's just so much history here in Boulder that people just don't take advantage of, or they may not even be aware of it. People think of Colorado, and they also think of Boulder as such a new place. They don't realize how much history is here. Well, my next guest knows a little bit about that history because she's the executive director and the CEO of the Boulder History Museum, which, believe it or not, goes back over 74 years. just about, right? 19, or did I get it right?
It does, 72.
70, that's why I failed math. But I was close, right?
Yeah,
Nancy Geyer, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Peter.
So, I mean, what's interesting is that I would not have guessed, honestly, that you had a museum that was 72 years old in Boulder, because everything since the American West, it just came upon our radar, and yet it goes back that far.
It does, yeah. People 72 years ago were looking at preserving the early stories of the community.
And what were those early stories of the community? Because you had so many different types of people who were there, you know, American Indians too.
Yes, yeah. The Native American story is an important one, and that's part of it. We have an Arapaho Chief Niwot who we know camped in this area, and so there's a lot of history related to the Native Americans, and then the discovery of gold, which changed everything.
Well, let's talk about Chief Niwot for a second, because it's one thing to say, yes, you've done your homework and your research, that you know that they were here, mm-hmm. but how much was preserved?
Well, physically, not a lot. Stories have been passed down, and some histories have been written, and so from diaries and letters and even early photographs, we have learned the history of the people who were here.
I mean, so much of a museum these days can be put into the terms of just great storytelling.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? So your exhibits are interactive, I suppose.
They are. They are, yes. And interactive in that you can look at diaries on touch screens and things like that from the very early history. We are getting much more interactive because we're including more contemporary history as well.
Now, I've mentioned this before on the show. I'll mention it again. When I first came to Boulder many, many years ago, of course, the impact on me was the cafeteria, Alfred E. Packer, the Alfred Packer Memorial Cafeteria, right?
Yes.
Have you had a retrospective on Mr. Packer?
You know, we actually haven't.
What? No. What? The only man ever convicted for cannibalism?
Yeah, and you know, it wasn't in Boulder County, but you know, that's one to put on the list.
Yeah, I'd come back for that. I'd come back, but you know, you've got some very interesting, provocative exhibits in the past. I like from tea to tofu.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, we have Boulder has become a mecca for natural products and natural foods, and a lot of that can be traced to the very early roots of our community. And so we did an exhibit that included the very early pieces. There was a sanitarium in Boulder in 1898 that was serving granola. It actually was called granola.
Wait a minute.
Menu.
Are we talking about the birthplace of granola?
I think we are.
Wow.
I think we are. And then Celestial Seasonings.
Well, those guys were Colorado all the way.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Mo Siegel was picking herbs in the mountains here in Boulder and making his tea.
No, I remember doing a story on him when I was at Newsweek back in 1976, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it was the early 70s that
yeah.
he started Celestial Seasonings right
exactly.
here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I have to mention Boulder's history on tap.
Yeah, well, you know, we have so many breweries in Boulder that
I'm shocked.
Yeah, well, we decided to take advantage of that and, again, trace the history of that, but also look at all of the breweries that are here today.
I mean, Boulder was a city that was founded, I believe, see if I get this date right, 1859?
Correct.
I got one out of two,
yeah,
right?
That was good.
When gold was discovered, mm-hmm. right? So you have over 100, almost what? We're getting up to 175 years here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? What's the biggest surprise at your museum that people are not going to expect to see?
Biggest surprise?
Well, they would walk away, like granola, for example. But, I mean, they walk away going, I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Chief Niwot story is fascinating for a lot of people because a lot of people actually don't know the story of the Arapaho Indians. A lot of people even that live here don't know that Boulder's here because of gold and that it was a bunch of miners that came out here. But, you know, there are some things that more contemporary. We have so many, like, Nobel laureates. We have so many Olympic athletes and world-class athletes. The concentration of just world-class people in our community is really remarkable, and that's something that we highlight.
And do those people get involved in the museum?
They do. We certainly ask them to contribute. And
I'm not talking donors. I'm talking actual getting involved creatively.
Yeah. Yeah. They help us with the exhibits. We ask for their
memorabilia.
You know, yeah. And so we've had, you know, Olympic running shoes on display, and we have the first cauldron that Steve Demos used to make tofu back in the 70s.
So far we've got granola.
Yeah.
We've got tofu.
Yeah. We've got herbal tea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to ask the obvious question, marijuana.
Marijuana will be in our upcoming exhibit.
Is that an interactive exhibit?
Well, you know, I don't know. Interactive, immersive exhibit, who knows?
Whether you like it or not. Whether you like it or not. And there's a Hollywood component too, isn't there?
Well, we did an exhibit called Hollywood Colorado, which actually highlighted all of the movies that have been filmed in Colorado and some of them in Boulder.
And admission?
Admission currently is $6.
Affordable.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And a website, perhaps?
We do have a website, www.boulderhistory.org.
Dot tofu, dot granola, dot marijuana. I got it. I just want to make sure. Of all the exhibits that you're planning right now that are just in the works, right, what's the one that's got you the most excited?
So we're actually building a new museum in downtown Boulder. And with that, we are creating some really exciting, highly interactive exhibits. They're actually
because you can actually build a museum for that.
Yeah. And so, well, we're actually converting a Masonic Lodge into a museum, but it's
wow.
a great building. So a lot of things, science and technology and an immersive experience to learn the Native American story. So it's going to be really exciting.
Very cool. Nancy Geyer, the executive director and the CEO of the Boulder History Museum.
This is your captain speaking. There is absolutely no cause for alarm.
Get your motor running. Head out on the highway. Looking for adventure.
I'm not going to take you back in time. Gosh, 36 years ago, I came to the campus here at the University of Colorado to speak at something called the Conference on World Affairs. It was legendary then, not because I was there, trust me, and it's legendary now. And here to explain this amazing conglomeration of people who come together every year. And by the way, this isn't like the World Economic Forum where everybody's staying in five-star hotels. I'm bunking in faculty housing, but the integration of all these people from different walks of life, I'm telling you, it is well worth the visit, even though I was not here for 36 years, but I'm coming back. Say hello to John Griffin from the Conference on World Affairs. Hey, John.
Oh, hi, Peter, and thanks for having me, and we'd love to have you back at the Conference on World Affairs.
Let's explain what it is, because it was started by this truly character guy named Howard Hickman, right?
Yes, Howard started the conference after the original conference actually was meant to boost support for the United Nations in the early 1950s and late 1940s. And it went so well that Howard said, let's keep this going as a permanent fixture on the CU campus.
So you've been doing this more than 50 years.
Not me.
Not you, but...
but yes, the CU has been doing it for 69 years.
By the way, in the interest of full disclosure, can I tell you my biggest discovery coming to the campus?
You can.
The Alfred Packer Cafeteria.
Yes. Which
named after the only man in America who was ever charged and convicted of?
Cannibalism.
Yes. We love it. I mean, and I remember, I'll never forget this. I actually researched the story, and I remember reading the judge's actual verdict. And he said, there were four men out in that trail. You ate three of them. Guilty. I was like, come on. What a great way to name a student cafeteria.
That's truly a reflection of the uniqueness of the campus.
It is.
Yeah.
But tell me you've had some forget me, put me in the back burner. You've had some incredible people here.
We have over the years, you know, and as you said, they come from all areas of human endeavor. We've had Henry Kissinger, Eleanor Roosevelt, Steve Martin, of course, Roger Ebert, the famous film critic.
I spoke on a panel with him when I was here, yes.
Roger Ebert was here for several decades.
Yeah.
And he originated something he called Cinema Interruptus at the conference, where he would show a film.
And stop it.
And then anyone could stop it.
Yeah.
Not just Roger, but any
member still doing that?
Of the audience. We are.
That's
we
great.
Are.
I love that.
And pose a question to Roger or whoever the critic was. And then after they got their answer, then they would crank it back up and keep going. So,
but it's really, it's a week, isn't it?
It's a 5-day conference.
You have, 200 panels, 100 speakers?
And one of the really unique aspects of the conference is that the speakers are with us the entire week, and they'll be on not just a panel or two, but usually 8 to 10 panels across a wide variety of topics.
Yeah. So, I think I was on a panel on television and one on gardening. No, I'm kidding. No. Yes, I could have been. It would have been a very bad panel. And here's the Brown Thumb himself. But you also have 70,000 people who show up at this.
We do. And so your visitors will be, or your listeners will be pleased to hear that the conference is free and open to the public. And that's not just the Boulder public, it's anyone.
Anybody.
And so, it is a great reason to come to Boulder in April every year. Regardless of what their area of interest is, we have panels on business, arts, science and technology, politics, the media. And again, it's all free and open to the public every year.
And is there a website? I bet there is.
There is. And on that website, we have links to our archival material. So not only is this year's conference free, every year's conference is available to your listeners, at least.
So it's all archived.
It's all archived. Every single session.
Am I archived? Am I archived?
You are.
Oh, this is scary.
At least in audio. In more recent years, we also have video material available on our YouTube channel.
Amazing. And the website?
It's colorado.edu/CWA.
The Conference on World Affairs. It'll be this coming April.
April 10th to the 14th.
So we have time to plan.
You do. Yep. Book your trip to Boulder.
And by the way, if you're showing up, keep in mind, accommodations are tough to get. So you may be bunking in with who knows who, but that's part of the conference.
Where are the wagons?
The wagon is too slow. Can't you ride?
It's not that he can't ride. How is it you put it home?
They're dangerous at both ends and crafty in the middle. Why would I want anything with a mind of its own bobbing about between my legs?
Audible.com has more than 150,000 titles and virtually every genre. So check it out for yourself. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial. And coming up next weekend is the Jaipur Literary Festival. It's the Literature Festival, excuse me. And the founder is a Minnesota girl named... Wisconsin, Minnesota.
Sort of,
yeah. Well, you were born there. I know that.
I sure was.
Jesse Friedman, welcome.
Yes, thank you so much, Peter.
So tell me what this festival is all about.
Well, first I'd like to correct that I brought the Jaipur Literature Festival, which is world-renowned, to Boulder, Colorado.
I didn't correct anything. I didn't say that. what are you correcting?
I'm correcting that I didn't found the Literature Festival per se.
Okay.
So I need to be careful about
that. Certain researchers on my staff will be taken out and slaughtered, but that's okay.
Well, that's appropriate.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. You said so. Okay.
So,
but you brought it here.
I did. I brought it here, which was pretty darn stunning, since New York City wanted this, Chicago wanted this, San Francisco, Seattle.
So why did Boulder win out?
So Boulder went out. The producers, Teamwork Arts, who did found the Jaipur Literature Festival in India going on 10 years ago, it burgeoned. It exploded into a worldwide phenomenon pretty quickly. And as I was saying, all over the U.S., cities were vying for it. And he chose Boulder, and we were just completely amazed.
Let me ask you a question about this, because I want to get down to a definition of terms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the fastest growing segments in the world of travel is wellness and well-being.
Yes.
And this fits right into it. Because
mm-hmm.
it's about mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
It's about contemplation.
Mm-hmm.
It's about understanding your surroundings.
Right. And it's about understanding each other. There's the foundations of this literature festival are diversity and putting deep thinkers and the finest writers in conversation with one another, creating panels of authors from utterly diverse backgrounds and putting them in conversation. And what we find is that the audience experiences a profound sense of depth and joy and community. And who knew that the broad public would be so interested in deep thinking?
You know what? I won't disagree with you about the who knew part, but I'll tell you
mm-hmm.
this. You said my favorite word twice in that last sentence, conversation.
Yes, that matters.
It matters. And most people today either don't know how to do it, Mm-hmm. They know how to text.
Right.
They don't know how to converse. Right. They don't know how to, what we're doing right now, sitting in this studio in Boulder, I'm looking right at you, you're looking right at me, we're having a conversation.
Right.
Now, other people are listening, which is exactly what you're doing at the Literature Festival.
That's true.
Right?
That's absolutely true.
And that sparks common ground. And once you can find common ground, all things are possible.
Right. It sparks understanding, and it also is a reflection for the audience of the potential of their genuine humanity instead of just, you know, thumb typing.
We know. Right. Now, to be honest, this is not where at the end of the festival everybody sings Kumbaya. This is not that.
No, it's not Kumbaya. Our sessions cover topics from gun violence to human trafficking to climate change to race, Black lives, immigration, Native American voices.
Otherwise known as current events.
Well, otherwise known as current events, but the difference is it's not just what we usually get in the United States is American journalists talking to us about things we hear every single day, the same information. In this case, we have authors from all over the world discussing from completely unique perspectives. We'll have people in the government from India talking about the U.S. elections, for instance.
Oh, I would love to hear.
Mm-hmm. Well, please
That needs a lot of contemplation, by the way,
well,
and meditation.
Then there's that.
Yeah, then there's that. But what's interesting, though, is you're talking about this in a different way to filter it, in a different way to all these topics.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Expanding awareness and creating a common ground, as you said, a tie between you and somebody from Moscow or Cairo or Jaipur, India.
And this is coming up next weekend. How many people are going to show up?
Well, last year at the Boulder Public Library, over 2 days, we filled 8,000 seats, and that was considered extraordinary for an unknown event in Boulder.
At a public library.
At a public library.
Somebody actually went to a public library. Even that, to me, is amazing.
Yes,
I love it.
Yes. The libraries.
Now, if the library was smart, they'd give everybody library cards while they were there.
I bet
just
they would like to.
Just, you know?
They're ready to. They're there ready to.
Listen. Yeah. Those overdue charges are a bitch, but forgetting that.
Well, they have forgiveness days, you know. So.
I didn't know. Okay, I'm in.
Please.
It's all about, at the end of the day, it's all about forgiveness.
Yeah. It is, and that is such an underpinning of the festival. And outreach and access is another underpinning of this festival. It's free. We do outreach literacy programs throughout the Denver metropolitan area. And it's a really meaningful event that people have. It's unexpected. It's something they've never experienced before.
And the website?
JaipurLiteratureFestival.org/Boulder.
Yeah, you can't forget the Boulder part.
/Boulder.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, Roger. What's our vector, Victor?
Howard Radio, clearance, over.
That's Clarence, over.
Over.
Roger.
Huh?
And joining me now is the founder and host, actually just the founder and director, I should say, of the Boulder International Film Festival, Kathy Beek. How are you?
I'm doing great.
And you know, you're going into your 13th year, and amazing, 22,000 people show up at this all the time, right? I mean, now, everybody, look, I went to the University of Wisconsin. We have a film festival, too. And you know what? You actually look forward to it because you're going to see stuff that no one else has seen. These are not just like esoteric art films. It's really cool stuff.
Absolutely. And that's the whole point of a film festival, is to show films that you're not going to see in the Cineplex. You know, we show films that are a little bit more obscure. They're indie films. They're fabulous films that just may not be at the theater down your street.
And you interview the celebrities in many cases who are presenting their films or who are in those films.
Yes, we do. We've had a lot of great celebrities at the festival.
Shirley MacLaine.
Yes.
James Franco, Oliver Stone, and of course, Mr. Behavior himself, Alec Baldwin.
Yes.
Did he behave?
He did behave. He was fabulous, actually.
Wow.
He was wonderful, yeah.
Okay, so he wasn't asked to leave. He actually did it.
He actually did.
To ask. You always have to ask whether he didn't get into a fight.
He
didn't punch
fabulous.
Anybody out.
We loved him. He was great.
So, you know, what kind of films are we talking about?
Yeah, well, we show all kinds of genres. We show feature films, documentaries, short films, adventure films, student films, just about anything.
And the filmmakers are here.
Yeah, and the filmmakers come. We get most of the filmmakers.
Because there is a circuit. There is a circuit of film festivals, but there are a couple that really make the grade, and yours is one of them.
Yeah, I like to think that, sure.
And it's also a foodie event.
It is, because Boulder has so many great chefs, and so we like to marry sort of the food and the film genres, and we have a great event called CineChef, where we have 8 Boulder chefs that come in. These are world-renowned chefs, and they pick a movie theme, and then they cook a little dish based on that, and people come in and vote for their favorite.
So my dinner with... No, we can't talk about that movie. Hey, how many films are submitted? Like hundreds, right?
Well, we get over 1,000 films submitted, but we also scout films beyond that, too, so we're really considering about 1,500 films every year for the festival, and we only pick...
How do you make those decisions?
It's hard. Sometimes it's like choosing between your children.
Because... if I were doing the curating here, don't laugh, but I'd want to pick some really amazing ones, some really off-the-wall ones, right? The ones that really got to ask you, like, what drug were they on when they decided to do this one? But it was interesting, sparse the conversation. And then pick 3 or 4 that are really bad.
Oh, why would you pick the bad ones?
Because you have a point of comparison.
Oh, that's an excellent thought. I like that.
Remember,
we don't like to show bad films.
No. You don't have to call them bad. You just say, hey, good luck. How about that? No, look, you know, there's a museum in Boston called the Museum of Bad Art.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the Museum of Bad Art.
Well, we don't want to be the Museum of Bad Film here in Boulder. We show fabulous movies.
You're the Museum of Comparative Film.
Comparative film, okay.
So some are better than others. They can't all be great.
Well, the ones we show are. So we take 1,500 films.
Well, excuse me.
We do. The festival is very critically acclaimed. And we take 1,500 films and we only pick between 50 and 60. So they are great. They are great films.
According to Kathy B.
Well, and according to
critics'
reviews.
You know, I'm actually doing a session at the University of Wisconsin, an evening event next month, which I'm really looking forward to, interviewing one of my alums. I went to the University of Wisconsin too, Andrew Bergman. The guy who wrote Blazing Saddles and The Freshman and, I mean, Fletch. I mean,
that sounds like fun.
We're going to have fun.
Oh, my God.
Because we're doing clips, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You can't. Blazing Saddles alone.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And
oh my God.
Sadly, Gene Wilder just passing away. But I mean, that movie was so much fun.
Oh, that is going to be a blast. I'm glad you're doing that.
I mean, I look at the movies that are really great movies. I mean, they're the movies of the moment, right? Mm-hmm. But they're the movies that really hold up,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you look at a movie and know this one's going to hold up?
Yeah, I mean, we know it's a great film, and often, you know, it goes from BIFF on to better, bigger, greater things. They win Oscars after they come to us.
You just called it BIFF.
BIFF, the Boulder International Film Festival.
See, there you go.
That's the shorter.
I know.
Short
but some of these films are also controversial.
Yeah, there are some controversial films. I mean, we don't hand it to the audience on a silver platter. We want to generate discussion, and we want to generate dialogue about films. And we love films that people will walk out of and talk about for either days, weeks, sometimes years.
And this is happening every year in March?
Yeah, every year in early March. And
and how do you get more information about it?
Well, you can
this
go
is
to...
your opportunity to plug. Go.
Yeah. Okay. It's the website is biff1.com, as in Boulder International Film Festival, and the number 1.com. And Boulder is such a beautiful place to come to a film festival. I can't even express the beautiful nature of this town. And we have great hotels, and the festival's all within walking distance. And
are they all done inside?
All the venues?
Oh, no, all the films. Or do you have some outside?
Yes. No, we don't have outside films in early March because you could have 70 degrees here or you could have a little cooler. So we can't really plan
that would be a different
outdoor.
Kind of movie.
That
yes.
would be a different kind of movie. But you can come in town, stay at the St. Julian, the Boulderado Hotel, the Bradley Inn, and they're all within walking distance of the festival. Come to our great events. We have food. We have fabulous movies. We have wine.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Flight 438. We'd like to tell you now about some important safety features of this aircraft. The most important safety feature we have aboard this plane is the flight attendants. Please look at one now.
I always like to ask the locals wherever I happen to go. My next guest certainly qualifies as that. He's the founder and the host of E-Town, another radio show, but a different kind of radio show. I mean, you guys are local, but you're also national.
That's right. We're on about 300 stations around the country.
And what are you talking about?
It's mostly a music show, Peter. It's a lot of live performance, but I also interview the musicians. And then since 1991, we've been talking about all kinds of hippie vegetarian themes like renewable energy and solar power and sustainable agriculture and things like that.
Yeah, but you said hippie. It's gone beyond hippie. Come on.
I know, yeah.
It's mainstream now.
It's mainstream and it's big business, but it's smart. And we started talking about it a long time before it was common parlance.
Well, you look like you're solar power to me and that you're renewable.
Well, that's is that a compliment?
Yes. It can be, yeah.
Good.
But from a local perspective here in Boulder,
yeah.
What are some of the big issues?
Well, I think the obvious ones are things like crowding and affordable housing and transportation. We are basically victims of our own success in that Boulder started a long time ago buying up land all around the city.
How long have you been here?
I've been here 40 years.
Wow, you only look about 40.
Well, you know, my granddaughter's in high school, if that puts any context.
I'll be checking you into home immediately following the show. Well, so you've seen all the changes.
I've seen a lot of them, and I've been downtown Boulder for most of those years. So in some ways, the changes haven't been as obvious there because either it's an historic neighborhood or a lot of the original housing stock is still the same. And I'm a pedestrian. I'm from New York originally. I like walking around and riding my bike. I don't spend a lot of time in my car. And I think that as such, I haven't been as confronted with the changes that have happened having to do with traffic, major development that's east of town, and so on.
Well, as a 40-year veteran here, let's talk about where you like to go and what you like to do. Where do you like to hang out for breakfast, lunch, or dinner that's not in the brochure, that's not in the guidebook, that you know you got to go there because you're going to always order X?
Wow. One of our favorite breakfasts lately is at a place called Shine, and they have a Boulder breakfast that's just poached eggs and quinoa and sautéed greens that's just healthy and delicious and good.
Quinoa.
Yeah.
You know, answer this question, because, you know, we go back to the pre-hippie days, but I have to ask this question. 5 years ago, was anybody even mentioning quinoa? No. 5 years ago, was anybody mentioning kale? No. 5 years ago, has anybody mentioned the word gluten? Oh, my God. I want to open a new restaurant. You know what the restaurant's going to be called? Gluten for Punishment. I mean, and it's going to be an all-gluten restaurant.
Right.
Because
there's a lot of them already.
I have friends of mine
actually
who have no gluten problems whatsoever, but they want to be hip and like a gluten-free cookie, please. Like, why? I don't know. I'm supposed to have that.
Yeah. Well, you know what's really funny? In Italy, where you think about pasta and bread and all this stuff, Helen and I were traveling there a few years ago. There is an epidemic of celiac and gluten intolerance in Italy.
But they didn't know, right?
But if you go into a restaurant now and you order something senza glutine, it's not like we were going, wow, because my wife doesn't eat gluten.
Right.
And so it's common in lots of places. But I will say this, Peter. Boulder, 40 years ago, had health food stores that were talking about quinoa and kale and all that stuff.
And the people who worked at health food stores, you know how they talked? Like, hello.
Well, no.
Welcome.
Those people are all now.
It's true. And they actually look like tofu.
But no, those people are all now successful entrepreneurs who've bought and sold different companies because
White Wave did.
And Celestial Seasonings.
Of course,
and
that was Mo, yeah.
But all of these entrepreneurs were in the health food stores in those days.
But remember, come on, 40 years ago, you walked into a health food store, the people there looked emaciated.
Yeah.
Their skin was beyond white, and they're like, hello.
And there were worms in the rolled oats. And
oh, yeah, there were. And they all whispered, you're like in a bad library. Come on.
Yeah.
Hello. Yes, we're going to eat like this.
But
too.
We stuck it out, man. We stayed.
We stuck it out, man.
Well, Boulder is
No, you waited for the marijuana revolution.
No, that's irrelevant.
Okay.
Boulder is a college town.
Of course.
With a lot of great, smart, talented people.
It reminds me of my college town, Madison, Wisconsin. Very much the same.
It's a lot like Madison. It's a lot like Ann Arbor. It's a lot like, you know, lots of college towns. But because we have the mountains on one side and open space all around us, we had to figure out how to make a bike trail go right through the center of town that is absolutely a vital artery for people traveling all over the place. We have a farmer's market. We have a tea house. We have all these resources.
You were ahead of the curve.
Chautauqua was there more than 100 years ago.
Right.
And that's a defining characteristic of our hometown.
And as I said, you were ahead of the curve.
Yes. And now we're paying the price because everybody wants to be here. It's expensive.
Nick Forster, the co-founder and host of E-Town and a grandfather.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
There you go. Keep that going. This is Flight 372 on SWA. The flight attendants on board serving you today. Teresa in the middle. David in the back. My name is David, and I'm here to tell you that shortly after takeoff, first things first, there's soft drinks and coffee to quench your thirst. But if you want another kind of drink, then just holler. Alcoholic beverages will be $4.
My next guest, I mean, if I were to actually read you his biography, we'd run out of time. But let's just say he and I probably ran into each other about 20 years ago at the Little Nell in Aspen.
Yes, most definitely.
Most definitely. And then he went to work with Thomas Keller at this underrated place called, I think, French Laundry up in Yountville. If you want a reservation, I think I'm still waiting for my table. And now he's come back to Boulder and opened up a neighborhood restaurant called Frasca Food and Wine. So welcome back.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Why Boulder?
You know, my wife and I fell in love with Colorado when I worked at the Little Nell, and I loved working for Thomas Keller at the French Laundry, but we wanted to be close to her family, and they live in Golden, but Boulder, there was a magnetic energy that brought us here.
And you know, so much people have this stereotyped image of Colorado as only seasonal and ski. It's not. It's really not. Aspen, you know, it's like, you know, come for the winter, stay for the summer. Well, Boulder, it's year-round.
It's year-round. It's great. It's such a great community.
What makes it a great community? Other than the fact that you've got the university, so you've got that concentration of just intellectual energy going.
Well, you nailed it right there, Peter. Like, I don't think I could have a restaurant based on a region like Friuli Venezia Giulia in any other city.
Say that again.
Friuli Venezia Giulia.
Which is where?
It's in northeastern Italy. It's right next to Slovenia, below Austria. So we're a very regional, specific restaurant.
Is it on the coast?
Part coast, part mountains, part wine country.
Wow.
It's spectacular.
So if it's on the coast, am I guessing they're doing Pinot Grigio? Or?
Oh, you bet, man. We're great at Pinot Grigio in Friuli, yeah.
Okay.
And really, because the city is so intellectually charged, people are adventuresome. And it's been really great for us. It's been 12 years, and it's been wonderful.
All right, so I got to ask this question. I do this every time I talk to someone like you. Okay, we are in Boulder. Not talking about your own operation. Where do you go to hang out?
Well,
for breakfast, lunch, or dinner? Go ahead.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I'd love to. You know, my wife and I love having an espresso and just wake up the morning at either Logan's or Keurig. There's a great coffee culture here in Boulder.
I'm shocked.
It's great.
Just shocked.
It's fantastic. And then, you know, the food scene is just so blossomed as of late. We love going to see our friends at Oak. We love the guys at the kitchen. They do a great job. We love having lunch at the kitchen.
And what do you have in there?
You know, the kitchen, well, if any of their waiters were here, they would definitely call my wife out because she's a creature of habit there. She loves their smoked salmon. I'm more adventuresome. I'll do whatever happens.
Now, do those guys smoke their own salmon?
No, they don't. They have someone do it for them, and it's really great. But okay. It's really wonderful.
Okay, fine.
And then, you know, we go to Oak. Brian Dayton and Steve Redzikowski's restaurant, Oak. It's one of our last night off. That's where we went. Great wine list, great food. Steve's fantastic chef.
All right, now you mentioned wine, and you are a sommelier, so let's talk about this for a second. Forgetting the movie Sideways, just put it away, okay? Every state in the United States, I think, except one, makes wine.
Yes.
Right? Colorado included.
Yes.
Is it any good? The truth, come
I'll
on,
be,
talk
I'll
to
be me. Honest, you know, and I've been, I've known the Colorado wine community for 20 plus years. I think the thing that's holding Colorado wine back is that they get into a rut of Cabernet, Chardonnay, and maybe those are varietals that really don't grow well at this altitude. They might want to look at things from like northeastern Italy, like...
Or Oregon.
Or Oregon, yeah, where you have a shorter, more intense growing season.
We're back to Pinot again.
Pinot Grigio, boom, would be great here. Müller Thurgau, all these great...
Why don't they do it?
I think they're afraid to. I think they're so based on what they think they should be doing, because Napa Valley does that, and we're not Napa Valley here. We have a very short, intense...
And you're never going to be Napa Valley.
Never.
Do you serve Colorado wines in your restaurant?
You know, we do at times. I think we do, because, you know, it's like, it's one of those situations. When we wake up in the morning, we think of Friuli first, northern Italy second, and the rest of the world. I think the guys at Sutcliffe do a good job. Like, we've worked with their Riesling before. I think it does. It's great.
Now, second question I always have to ask. When you open the restaurant, what did you put on your menu that you thought, man, everybody is going to love this, and it completely tanked? And then conversely, what's the one thing you were like drag kicking and screaming into putting on the menu and everybody loves?
Okay.
And don't go to the second question first.
No, I won't. Probably the first thing that we thought everyone would love, this is 12 years ago, I think, you know, we thought, you know, we would do something like a calzone, which was a you know, we think of pasta here in America, stuffed pasta, really egg dominated, like in Emilia Romagna. And, in Friuli, you might not have the egg in it, so it doesn't have the same silky texture. It took 12 years to get guests to love that. And now they do.
Because but you stuck with us. You stuck with something that tanked for 12 years?
Yeah, on and off. You bet.
Oh, my God. Is it on the menu now?
On certain nights, for
on
sure.
On certain nights.
Because we do it seasonally. So,
okay.
And then something that really kicked and screamed, we have a restaurant right next to Frasca called Pizzeria Locale. And we moved an employee, long-term chef, to Naples, Italy. And I went to check on him. And he's like, this is the pizza we're putting on the menu. And we were in the development stage of a very traditional Neapolitan-style pizzeria. And he goes, it's called Mais. And it was corn, creme fraiche, and ham. And I'm like, Jordan.
You're out of your mind.
We're not doing this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.